going to be talking about the role of listening in conversation. I've been working with and using the book, You Just Don't Understand, by Men and Women in Conversation by Deborah Tannen. It is available in the bookstore, so this is a little commercial for that. They said if you ordered the books, you should let people know that this is available. To be honest, a lot of what we've been talking about, though it is in Deborah Tannen's book, we have gone off on some very interesting tangents, and which I think is wonderful. I have all these notes here and things from the book, which I haven't used at all, which is great. And so, but I think so, if you've got some questions or if you're wondering, Deborah Tannen comes from the classical, the historical mindset of men and women, that again, women are looking primarily for intimacy in their connectedness in their conversations with men, and men are attempting to maintain their independence and their separateness in their conversations with women. We have, in the last few times that we've talked, really sort of gone beyond that wide dichotomy and have come closer, have talked about how, you know, there are a number of you women who are talking about how you really are attempting to keep your separate self in and be comfortable with separateness in connectedness and in intimacy. And men are also saying, I am attempting to become more intimate and not be fearful of that when I'm in conversation. So that's been very, it's been wonderful, wonderful to hear, and also atypical, I believe. So again, what we're going to do today is I'm going back to the broad dichotomy, and I'm sure that we will probably bring it closer to the center because this is what our population is all about. The title in Deborah Tannen's book, and I didn't put this on the sheet, the title up there, but it's lecturing versus listening. Or in quotes, let me explain it to you. You've all heard that before. And historically, who says that? Let me explain it to you. Yes, yeah, right, yeah, men say that to women or
students, children,
and sometimes other men. And when a man says that to another man, in what role, in what capacity is the man who is saying, let me explain it to you?
A
dominant role. So that whole dichotomy, or the word that I've learned this week is bifurcation. I'm learning lots of new words. So the bifurcation is lecturing versus listening. Historically, now I'm not so sure that and you can, you know, feed into this, but historically, children and women were to be seen and not heard.
That's true.
And I think that that one of the things that the women's movement is bubbling up to the surface is that women are saying, we want to be heard. We don't want to just be listening. Because again, historically, the person who was considered the listener was who in a conversation? Who was the good listener?
The
woman was the good listener. The exception to that would have been the psychoanalyst or the psychologist who you would go and tell your problems to, who is generally a man, but how is that listening role different? I mean, that person is listening to you, but you're telling that person information because they're what?
I'm going to tell you what to do then.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, because they're the authority. They're the ones in charge. They will explain it to you. And again, historically, that's been a male role, a male job. So we've got the lecturer, we've got the listener, or we've said we have the teacher and the student. We have the supervisor and the employee. We also have this one up and one down. Or as we talked,
would you put the pastor and the parishioner into that?
Ooh. You could put the pastor and the parishioner. And as we learn, is that parishioner or is that
I-O-N?
I-O-N. Okay, parishioner. And as we learned yesterday, most of these parishioners are
women.
Most of the parishioners are women. So, as I was thinking about this, trying to use what we've been talking about in a lot of different sessions up here at Holden, let me ask you, what does this say to you, looking at a list like that? What do you get from that? What information, what stands out for you in that? You know, the one thing that I haven't put up is man and woman, you know, at the bit, because I don't want to do that. But what stands out for you in
the word verses?
Huh?
The word verses.
Oh, the verses?
Yeah, that one is, you know, against the other. One's putting itself up to the other.
Okay.
That stands out to me.
All right, and do you see that as teacher versus student, supervisor versus employee, all the way down, down like that?
I tend to have that reaction, yeah.
Okay, would you say that that's an accurate assessment of that situation, or do you think that the verses brings out a negative aspect, that if we took away the verses, that lecturing and listening would both be equal, neutral, and that there wouldn't be a struggle?
One is is in control more than the other one.
Mm-hmm. Power.
A power struggle. So that it is there. With or without the word versus, there is that struggle there. How do you feel? Since we've sort of said that women are in that listening role, how do you feel? Do we agree with that or do we disagree? I mean, would we say on the whole that that's where women have generally been placed, in the listening role?
It's a pretty fair stereotype. I mean, it's about as fair as a stereotype can come.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, especially in this kind of list, it strikes me, except maybe for the one up, one down, which is very broad. All of them are kind of social roles. I mean, a supervisor, a boss, a pastor. And, you know, obviously those have generally been male. And then those on the other side have generally been female. I wonder how it would work in other kinds of relationships. For example, what comes to my mind is the complaint that I often hear from women about most of the men that I know is that they don't talk enough. And that, you know, in conversations, and that women feel that they have to do the talking because the men don't talk enough. Now, how does something like that fit in?
But isn't that usually in reference to when they're trying to talk about personal matters, not talking about...
Right, that's what I was saying. These are kind of social roles. And when the conversation gets to other kinds of things, then, you know, then it's a little bit different, perhaps.
Right, and a couple days ago, we talked about that women are more comfortable with talking about intimate topics and men talking about day-to-day kinds of topics. But when men do talk with women, do you find that what it comes to is lecturing versus listening? That the men are telling you about, informing you about things, as opposed to, you know, as opposed to being the listener in that. Does that? I mean, that's what you were driving at, or was?
Oh, no, yeah, no, I wasn't making any particular point. I just accept that these are kind of superior roles, and and your other image of intimacy, I think, is where women then complain that the men don't talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of this.
Mm-hmm. Or they don't talk about, as we talked before, they don't talk about the subjects that women want them to talk about, which are interpersonal relations, which are how are you feeling, how are we being connected. Mm-hmm. When men do talk, they will talk about how they will talk about their... their expertise, and if your expertise is not feelings, or then you won't talk about that. Expertise. We haven't talked about community and contest yet, and I'm hoping to do that tomorrow when we talk about the role of conflict. But I think you pointed out rightly that that men will lecture not only children and will lecture in female and male relationships, but they will also lecture other men. They will buy, and again, you know what I'm feeling? I'm feeling like I am telling men what they do. And I certainly would wish that the men in this audience would raise their hand and say, you don't know this if what I'm saying does not agree with you, or does not agree with your experience. Okay? Because again, what I said the first day is, I am not a man. So I'm coming from in things that I have read, and also from my own experiences. So if your experiences are different, please, please stop me and share with us what your experiences are. Yes?
From my experience, I found that, again, this is with the men that I know, those that have not been in some type of 12-step program, those that have not been in any type of therapy, tend to be the stereotypical male on the left. Those that have been in 12-step programs and or therapy are on the other side. And that's, for me today, that's much more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
But so I think stereotypically, yeah, they're the big, the macho man image.
That's interesting. Well, I wonder what change occurs in 12-step programs or in therapy that would change from one to the other.
Well, personally for me, I got in touch with my feelings. Prior to that, I didn't have any. I mean, I would say I was very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was brought up to with the big boys don't cry. What's wrong with you? There's nothing wrong. Don't cry. And so all those feelings that I think are probably there at birth were shut down. And once I began working, I discovered that they were still there. They were covered up, but they came to the surface and they've remained there, thank goodness.
Do you suppose that it could also include the acceptance of powerlessness?
Mm-hmm. Say some more about
that. Well, I'm just thinking that if a person accepts that they're powerless over their lives, they will tend to shut up.
You know? That they're not the expert, maybe there's something that they don't know.
Right.
Go ahead.
I think it's also that it's the expectation. You know, when you go to a 12-step meeting, people are basically sharing their feelings, and there's, I think, a lot of pressure on people to kind of share at the same level that the other people are sharing at. And I think out in society that isn't the case. People are sharing at a more superficial level, so that's, you know.
And also the expectation out in society is that you share at a superficial level. You know, I always smile when people walk up to you and say, how are you? You know, well, if I would stop them and say how I was and explain to them how I felt I was, especially on days when I don't feel particularly good, that makes and has made people very uncomfortable. What they expect to hear from me is,
I'm fine.
So that, so the expectation is for no one to share their feelings, to no one to share how they feel about this. Well, what I'd like to lead into is most of society, you know, again, I think that a lot of people here at Holden are considered exceptions to what's out there. And we need to end up dealing with people who are out there. You know, if you go back to your homes, most of the men that you will be dealing with will be doing lecturing, and most of the women that you will be dealing with will be doing the listening. I think that's probably a pretty sure bet when you get back there. And how do you deal with those people? You know, you're going to find that men will, because they have the expertise, they will challenge men and women in their expertise, or they will, men will be more likely to defend their expertise than women. Do you find that in situations? Cheryl, not to point you, but in your classes with science students, oftentimes, if a female student posits a theory about a particular thing, and a male student counters that, is the female student likely to defend her theory, or is she likely to back off?
Certainly not willing to defend it.
Uh-huh.
I think we're seeing some evidence of that up here.
Yes.
That last night, you noticed the young woman spoke, and then somebody countered her, and then right away she said, oh, I can't be right, or I've gotten myself in a circle. So I think we see examples all the time where when we're challenged, they're more willing to give it up than they are to defend it.
That's right. Because for the woman to defend herself, puts herself out in front and center. And historically, again, where are women placed? They're put in a passive role. They place themselves in a passive role. You know, I will be seen but not heard. I will not argue with you. We have the classic example of Paul saying, women keep silence in the church. You know, now that that doesn't necessarily, I don't believe well, I won't go into how I meant that. But historically, the church has said that we need to maintain, women need to maintain a passive role. Don't defend that. Don't show expertise in that area.
Well, we're supposed to maintain the harmony.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the harmony. And so if that means listening and not putting forth your ideas, then that's what happens in conversation. Then that's what will happen in conversation. And men are also more willing to show their expertise than women. Because if a woman shows her expertise to a man, what does that mean?
She's a pushy broad sometimes.
Okay, she's a pushy broad.
Threatening.
Yep.
So, bitchy.
Yeah, huh? Uh-huh. Aggressive. Yeah, cash. And not, you know, aggressive or assertive. And for women, being assertive or being aggressive is exactly the same thing. I mean, for men it's different, but for women, you know, if you're assertive, you're all the way over to the other end of the spectrum of being aggressive.
Maybe we'll touch on this really well, but I've always questioned why women care. Why do we care that we're perceived as, we would be perceived as being pushy or aggressive?
Uh-huh. Why do
we want to be loved?
Because it's where people see it. Anybody, yeah.
But somewhere in there is the idea that it's not feminine.
Yes. You know that. Don't show the boys that you're smarter than they are in science, because nobody likes the brainy girl. You know, the brainy girl doesn't go to the prom. You know, it's the dumb ones that go.
The dumb pretty ones.
The dumb pretty ones that go. That's right. So I think also we've talked about how women are conditioned and socialized to seek that connectedness, that if we didn't care, then we wouldn't care whether we were connected or not. And I think that the fact that we care, it's because we're so afraid to be separated. And if we show expertise, then the man gets mad about that or they get hurt, then separation occurs. And for a woman, that's the worst thing in the world that can happen.
I just wanted to bring up this other issue that Ted alluded to earlier. Namely, if you introduce the public and private issue and run a grid across listening or lecturing, listening on top, and then public, private on the side, creating kind of four boxes here. I just am not sure from my experience whether or not some of these differences don't play themselves out more dramatically in the public-private distinction than they do in the lecturing-listening. That is to say, women whom I have known have struggled a lot with finding a voice in larger public settings. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, the example that we just heard about the woman last night in the forum who tended, when she was challenged, then to concede or something.
Okay.
My suspicion is, in fact, I more than a suspicion, I lingered here and talked to six or eight folks. We had a long conversation for about an hour and a half, and then that same person was much more in what seemed like a relatively private setting. It was less formal, less structured. Then there was a whole different voice.
Yes.
She found her voice. She was just as much contributing as anybody else. That would be one example of a less formal setting. Among friends, the whole, I think, more clumsy distinction between home and public or polity comes in here a bit. But I don't want to make it strictly a domestic versus polity thing. I think public and private is better.
Right. Well.
So it doesn't just depend, it seems to me, on the subject matter. It's not just that we were talking suddenly about feelings. We were talking about the same kind of issues
right.
that we had been in the forum, but the context was just very different and had a lot to do with what kind of voice, what kind of role, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that I think that's very true, that women are much more comfortable talking in small group settings. That rapport talk versus report talk. Even, you know, I'm not saying that men aren't nervous standing up before a large group, but they are less concerned. They would be the expertise idea and the lecturing versus listening idea, that's a much more comfortable setting for them. The challenge part. I think that women are much more comfortable. Well, you tell me, women, are you more comfortable in doing the small group discussion? I think your example of the woman staying behind and talking more and even maybe challenging more and being more assertive about her opinions in a small group setting is very accurate. I think that I see that all the time. I know I see that in myself. And I think when we talked before about men talking more in public than women, the joke is, you know, the woman always talks too much. Well, statistics and studies show that that's not true, that in public men talk much more than women do by a large percentage. And that those private conversations is where the difference occurs. And in those private conversations are where the woman seeks to establish that rapport, seeks to establish that connectedness. The man is not in need of establishing that connectedness because he feels it's there. The woman is always checking that out, making sure that they're connected.
I think the converse, by the way, is also true. I think the women who've been teaching here at Holden have been quite explicit, I mean, since in the last 2 weeks, many of them, about their mode of pedagogy, including a more participatory mode and often breaking into smaller groups. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sound pedagogy in general. I mean, I think people tend to learn more.
You want to translate that word?
Pardon me?
You want to translate that word?
Oh, I'm sorry. A mode of teaching. A way of teaching, a teaching style. A teaching and learning, a learning style. It seems to me a sound way, but it also seems to me that it empowers women in a way that the large public realm, due to socialization, has not. So conversely, I think men feel more awkward as soon as someone says, now we're going to divide into groups of three. I think the men, more than the women, have a kind of uh-oh feeling, because somehow they can conceal themselves in a larger public setting, and they're not as comfortable with exposure.
Mm-hmm. Would you all agree with that? That if I were to say, let's divide into groups of three, and I want one man in each group, I would allow three men to be in a group, how would that, do you find your hearts racing then? Find your stomach starting to churn, and then I'm going to ask you to talk about your feelings.
And I don't think it would just be you were making, you know, one man and two women. I think probably the feeling would be there for three men together too.
Okay. Try.
Well, we are going to break into groups because I do want to do that. I do want to practice some listening. Some talking and some listening skills. So yeah, we will be doing that shortly.
I hope we're not saying that if we make this public-private distinction that this lecturing versus listening doesn't happen in the private conversation. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen men who realize the quickest way to win an argument is to pull out the lecturing mode and it stops right there. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want to say that just in the public this happens. I want to say that the private can happen.
What would you say happens when the man pulls out the lecturing mode?
Then the woman goes into listening mode.
No, I mean, what is he doing?
He wants to win the argument.
What's his action? What's he How is, I guess I'm not sure, like, is he just lecturing or is he just talking straight or?
Well, it's the expertise thing.
I think you probably notice a change, maybe a little bit of change in the voice and posturing of the body.
Well, and I have some male relatives who make definitive statements that cannot be argued with.
Yes, that's the thing, it's the relative.
They have to be right. They won't drop it until you give up and they're right. So you finally give up. And that's definitely a lecturing mode.
Do you listen, or going back to what you said earlier, do you just shut down?
No, I usually say, okay, fine, whatever.
So you don't really listen.
I don't agree. They feel they're right. I know they're wrong, but I shut up.
Yes.
But people that just on and on and on and on talking and saying the same thing over and over and over again.
I probably figure out a way to edge to the door, you know.
Yeah. But what could women do? What could women do in that situation? I mean, you could just stand there and listen and listen and listen, but I think what one thing that women could do to feel more empowered is to change that situation. And in a situation like that, what could a woman do? I mean, there are several things that you could possibly do.
Well, one thing I can think of that I do, which is nasty, is if at some point later it becomes cold. You know, which is just really
But that's down the line. What do you do
in that situation there? Because I agree. I think that those kinds of situations comes up in public or in private situations.
Maybe you could paraphrase back a little bit about what the lecture was about, and then say, now I'd like to express the way I see it.
Okay. All right. So you could challenge it, or you could agree, or you could, you know, so you could put in your own two cents worth. Rather than that, yeah, there's something. What else could
you could talk about your reaction to that change in mode? How do I feel that you're talking to me that way, and what that produces, the effect that produces in me?
Okay, so you could identify for the person. You know, this is what I see happening in this. I don't see this as a conversation. I see this as a lecture, and this is how that makes me feel.
Mm-hmm. Come on, yeah. Ultimatums. Either listen to me or I'm leaving.
Okay, all right, you can do some threats. You can do some threats, you can do some ultimatums, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I feel like I was trained very well as a listener, you know, and I consider that a good part of me. Mm-hmm. And since I've been at Holden, especially talking to men, I've been challenged to do more speaking, and that's totally out of my comfort zone. And yeah, they say, well, what do you think and what is your opinion? And you know, here I'm doing all the talking and you're not adding your half. Well, I'm used to that always being okay and acceptable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult for me to switch that role and to do that other. I'm comfortable with the lecturing and my just like being a good listener. And I'm not comfortable with the having some kind of, especially about intimate things. You know, it's like I'm used to getting all this intimate information from them, and then they don't ask me, so I just have, you know, I get to stay safe. And I find that, at least here, that's really changing with men wanting to say, well, I want to hear what you have to say too, and it's difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are your druthers with this? I mean, are you saying that this is something that you're wanting to expand on, or that you can't wait to get back to the outside world where you can just continue to listen and not be challenged to participate?
I think both. I think it's very, very scary for me. It feels really vulnerable to be doing something new.
And I think other women may identify with her, so I don't want to necessarily pick on you if you're feeling uncomfortable and don't want to talk anymore. But what is scary? What is scary about sharing your opinion in that area? And this can be for any woman if you're identifying with what she's saying. What's scary about that?
Well, it could change, and I think change anytime is scary. It's a new role.
And also, if you're going to put it out there, you might be called upon to back it up and defend it.
And what would that, and what would that mean?
That would require a little more expertise.
So your assumption is that whoever's talking to you has all of the experts, you know.
I'm just saying that that's one of the things that can happen. Mm-hmm. If you're going to take the courage to say what your thought is about something, then you also have to realize that there's a possibility that it's going to be challenged. And if it's this challenge, then if you think you're just going to, you know, cower, then why bother to bring it up in the first place? Okay. Right? So I think at some level you know that if you're going to put forth your opinion about something, that it's going to entail more than just that.
And I think your assumption is correct, that if you're talking with a man, the likelihood of them challenging your opinion is greater than if you're talking with a woman, because that's community and contest. That's just kind of a natural thing. I mean, men aren't doing that to be nasty. That's just how they do it. It's like being king of the mountain. I mean, they'll do that with anybody.
Right. We've all met people that are know-it-alls. And it's like, if I tell my opinion with someone who's a know-it-all, they're going to have to not only tell me that I'm wrong, but that they know that it happens to be this thing over here instead. And I think in a more equal conversation, I tell you my opinion about something, and the other person tells me how they react to that, and what parts they agree with it, and what part they don't, and how their idea is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But it's an exchange.
Mm-hmm. And what keeps women from doing that with men? What keeps women from saying, and this is my opinion. You know, I hear what your opinion is, and this is what my opinion is. We talked about being scared. What's the fear? We've talked about being afraid, but what's the fear for women in that?
Loss of connection.
Part. The possibility of loss of connection, yeah.
I feel part of it is what Beverly said too, is that I'm going to be misunderstood. And a lot of men that I've talked with, some women too, I guess, that there isn't that back and forth. It's not, you don't feel like you're having an equal conversation. So that if I say something that maybe I want to just say to sort out my own feelings, that they're not going to be interested, and they're just going to take what I'm saying as kind of, this is who I am, and go away with that. So I'm going to feel misunderstood. And so it's not going to be a conversation back and forth trying to sort out ideas.
And how would you know that you were understood in that conversation?
I think people are maybe asking me questions, clarification. Again, an equal exchange of just trying to talk and question things.
And
instead of waiting for a final answer, not trying to resolve it.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's it. Maybe a lot of men want to resolve it. Let's find out what the final answer is, and then we'll be done.
When I think of talking to some of my women friends, if I speak an idea or an experience or share something, it's like it gets kind of turned over and looked at from all different mm-hmm. sides, and just, you know, kind of ruminate on it. Whereas it often in talking to a man, it's put out there and it's going to be judged, evaluated, commented on.
It'll be challenged, and again, I think that for the woman to be challenged by the man, it's a very uncomfortable thing, because the woman, that challenge means, you know, I'm going to be separated from you. I'm going to have to defend my position, somebody's going to come out right, and somebody's going to come out wrong. And with men, that challenge is all part of it. You know, that's the fun of it.
She's going to appear dominant, possibly.
Well,
instead of.
But most women won't. Most women will back off and not say anything. But again, for the man, whether they're talking to a man or whether they're talking to a woman, it's the, you know, when little boys play, when they're young, and they're playing, that the idea is who wins, you know, who's the king of the mountain. I mean, the young boys are acculturated to that. It's not, when girls play, it's nurse, it's home, it's hospital, and then everybody joins in consensus. And from little on, women are, you know, this is how you play. You have consensus. You join together, and everybody plays nice. You know, gosh, boys don't play nice. You know, you're dead. You know, I win. I'm you're the Indian, and I'm the cowboy, and there's a winner.
Well, one comment you made is that part of the fun for men is that adversarial role.
Mm-hmm.
And I really disagree with you. I feel no. I feel like it's just something that's expected of men, you know, from early on. And it isn't necessarily fun. Like, if you also said that if you divided yourself into groups of three, if I was going to be the only man in a group with women, I think I'd feel more comfortable talking about my feelings than if I was with two other men. There, I'd feel like, oh God, am I going to be, you know, judge, I mean, I don't know. I think I'd feel more comfortable talking with women
about feelings.
About that. Yeah, and when I talk about my feelings, I usually do with a woman friend.
Why not with a man friend?
Most of my men friends just don't do that. You know, they're pretty matter of fact about things. You know, they talk about purchases they've just made, how they can't understand their girlfriend. You know, they're pretty topical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, your name is
Andy.
Andy said that he feels uncomfortable about that challenge. That, you know, that he wishes that challenge wasn't there, and feels like that's society pushing that you have to be challenged. Do you?
Well. I don't quite agree with that. I think that when men, if you're talking about the women backing off from a man being challenging, I think it's a defense mechanism on the part of the man.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't want to, he's sensitive, he doesn't want to talk about feelings. And so he's got this sort of offensive type of a thing. And a lot of men just don't know that. They don't know that.
What if they're not talking about feelings? What if they're talking about ecology?
They're maybe so afraid they don't want to get into feelings, because the woman is more in touch with feelings all the time, and it might evolve into a feeling thing, and the man is threatened.
Okay, all right, so.
And so I think
no
he goes on the offensive, and he doesn't even know he's going on the offensive. Mm-hmm.
To stay in control of the situation.
You've got your hand up, or just.
Oh, you can go ahead, you go first, okay?
You know, the thing you're talking about with the, I guess I haven't heard the word, I'd call it competition or competing, that women have to compete with the man. And I find that in a conversation with men that I feel I need to compete. And the thing that I find that I enjoy about conversations with women is that there's no need to compete. And I enjoy that much more, because even with men, I feel like I need to compete, and I don't want to compete.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to converse. And so I can see where women would be uncomfortable, because I'm uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
This is really strange. I feel kind of like I'm different, because I always thought I was going to grow out of this, the feeling of I can't talk because I'm going to be challenged. I want to go to seminary next year, and I've been waiting for the time when I finally know enough to prove that the experts aren't the experts, because I like to argue, I like the challenge, but I've always felt very alone, you know, because other women don't. I'm the only female in any class I'm in that speaks of, luckily enough, yeah. But it was very strange. It's very confusing to me, because I keep getting a signal. Just, I keep getting a feeling that I'm not going to have intimacy with men that I desire, because I don't play a normal female role. And I guess, you know, hearing this, it's like, wow, this is really true. And the expertise thing has made me shut up sometimes, but also has been fuel for my fire to keep going in education and my studies, to because I want to challenge that myself. Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think, you know, your feeling of being out there kind of on your own, or there are not many of you, is accurate. I don't think there are many women who are willing to take up the challenge, or to say, you know, and also your feeling of that men are real uncomfortable with you challenging them. I think that that's probably also an accurate feeling too.
But go ahead. I don't know if it's always just that we're not willing to, as much as a lot of times it's just not my priority to argue about things, you know. If it's something that I feel really strongly about, then I will, but it's not. I mean, I think part of it for some people is that they enjoy talking that way, they enjoy arguing about things, they enjoy feeling that role, but it's not enjoyable to me. So I think, well, why continue in this vein? It's not like I feel like my opinion's not as worthy, it's just like, well, I don't really enjoy that kind of a conversation, and I don't see any reason to have it.
And I'm sure that you don't enjoy that kind of conversation. I mean, I don't enjoy that kind of conversation. You were very gentle in your challenging of me. If you had been more assertive or more aggressive, or like if Mark would sit back there and challenge me, I would become very uncomfortable. I'm not sure how I would deal with that. I think I would probably deal with it differently than Ted would if Mark were to challenge him with something. I'm just, you know, using you guys as examples because you're there. So I agree with you. I guess where I want to go, or where I want to go with this is that I think women will continue to feel uncomfortable, or to feel like I don't want to challenge, or I don't feel like I can challenge, unless they are willing to do some different things, unless they are willing to try, you know, different methods. And I think men will continue to feel fear of women challenging them, unless they can kind of let go of some of that need to be, you know, on top, that they can go to a symmetrical kind of conversation. I said that I wanted to break up into groups, and I would like to do that, but you have...
Well, as I say, I think it's really important to underline the fact that both parties have responsibility in making it a better situation. It's not just that the man needs to learn to be less lecturing, but the woman needs to be more willing to take a position of equal partner in a conversation.
That's right.
I think that needs to be to say that loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so too. I think especially if that's an uncomfortable situation for you. Robin, is that right? You know, for Robin, that's not an uncomfortable situation for her. She feels like that's where she wants to stay. And I am not here to say, Robin, you shouldn't be in that situation. But I would encourage you to think about how that limits you. And the men too, you know, you may enjoy that lecturing mode and enjoy and want to continue to challenge that, and to, you know, to feel the thrill of victory in a verbal debate. And again, I ask you to think about how that limits you, what that's doing, especially in men and women conversation, what that's doing to the interaction with men and women. Let's see, there's a lot from this chapter that I wanted to, but would you like to do that, break up into groups, or shouldn't I bother to ask you? All right, I would like you to break up into
women
groups.
Would like to, and the men would.
Yeah, that's right, men would walk out the door. I'd like you to break up into groups of three, and we have more women in here than men, so I would like a man in each group of three. And if there are more men in the group, as that happens, then that's great. What I'd like you to do, because one of the things that we haven't talked about yet is listening. What is listening all about? What entails listening? And as women, have some of the women rightly pointed out, women are much better at listening than men. They've developed these skills over the years to a greater extent than men have. And so what we're going to do in the groups is the woman is going to talk and the man is going to listen. And there's going to be an observer, and I would like the observer to observe some of the listening skills that they observe in the man. Are you all familiar with listening skills, or do you want me to mark?
Yes.
Okay, all right, because if we're, I think most of us are. Is there anyone that feels like they aren't familiar with listening skills?
No, I meant yes. I want to know what listening skills
are. Oh, okay. Listening skills. Well, the biggest part, listening skills, there are some nonverbals, which include what?
Eye
contact.
Head nod.
Yeah. Anything else?
Not looking at your watch every 5 seconds.
Okay, all right, so your attentiveness.
Yeah.
Anything else? Posture? Posture, okay, body posture. And now we're giving you all these men at this point, but I want you to do it how you would actually do it, okay? All right, so because it's important so that you, okay, so all of those. Anything else, any other nonverbals?
Facial expression.
Okay, what about the verbals?
Asking questions that indicate that you're following the line of thought.
Okay, all right. Now, there are two kinds of questions. There are eliciting more kinds of information questions, and there are clarification questions, and there are the challenging questions. Okay?
Directed questions.
Or directed questions, again, that moves the topic to a different, but I think what I want to make sure about is the challenging question is going to, for at least for women, is going to do what to the conversation? It's going to stop it. You know, so that's important to know, that if it's a directing question or if it's a clarification question, that's going to continue the conversation in some ways. All right, what other verbals besides questioning?
Just an uh-huh.
Okay, so it's sort of a subverbal, but yeah, just being able to.
Yeah, paraphrasing.
Paraphrasing, restating what you heard the person say, and then the person comes back and says, yes, I said that, or no, I didn't say that, okay? Anything else in listening? Okay, those are the main kinds of listening skills that are important to remember. Okay, I want you to divide up into threes and topic. You know, this is just like choose a topic. I would suggest this would be kind of, because this will be sort of controversial, and talk about how you have viewed some of Elizabeth Bettenhausen's. Have all of you been able to go to Elizabeth Bettenhausen's? There are a few new people here, aren't there, that haven't done that. Some of what she was talking about was sexuality, homosexuality, sexuality for singles. Those topics, sexuality in general. So, because that's not necessarily going to be a comfortable topic for anybody to talk about. So, just talk about how you viewed her discussions, and if you weren't at the discussions, just in general, what some of your thoughts are around those topics, or you can choose a you can choose why you came to hold it also for that. So when you get in your groups, you'll have a group of three, two women and a man probably, but there may be two men in the group. But as long as there's no group with just all women, the woman will be the talker, the man will be the listener, and then there will be observer. The observer will look at the verbals and the nonverbals, and will also look at how the woman is talking. You know, what happens when the questions are asked? What happens if there maybe seems to be a challenge? Okay? And then we'll do that for a few minutes, and then I want you in your groups to talk about what that was like. Okay? So move around. You might have to move. You might have to get up early. And also what you observed in the speaker. And then I'd like us to talk about, just for a couple of minutes, how did you feel in the particular role that you were in? And I'd like to do that in small groups also, and then we can share with what we have. So observers, point out what you saw. Point out what listening skills you saw. If you didn't see any listening skills, point that out also. Also talk to the person who was talking. You know, what kind of things did you notice about that person who was speaking? Were they able to continue? Did they revert to the listening role? And then your feelings. Go ahead and just take a few minutes to do that.
Hello.
Here's my big voice. All right, I need to call time because it is after 5:15. If we want to continue for just a couple more minutes.
And I think in the interest of time, I'll just say that I think Harlan did a darn good job of listening, and Faye was a good, they allowed for all of us, so I want to be critical.
All right. It's not necessarily, you're not being critical, you're just observing. You know, that's all we're doing. You're not
good job.
Okay, you observe. Anybody else? Any other observations that you noticed that
I
observers?
This was a real artificial situation.
Oh.
So we were working really hard at talking and responding and remembering your list. You know.
Okay. All right. Sure. And every time I do this exercise, that one of the responses is always, "This is a real artificial situation." That's okay, because it is.
So
because it is artificial. I think it's important to remember that, because when you go out, it's not going to always. You know, mine would have worked really smooth in here. It's not going to work that smooth, and you're not going to think about some of these things.
In some ways, that it reminds me that for many women, when we are in an authoritative role, whether we're teachers or supervisors or whatever, we seem to be able to do these kinds of things, to put ourselves out there. When we get into a less structured, or what seems to be less structured situation, or an intimate relationship, we go right back into the passive role again. Mm-hmm. And that the skills that we have just don't get used.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great observation. I think it's really good.
Well, let's talk about the people who were, unless there's another observation from the observers. What about the listeners and the lecturers? How did you feel about being the lecturer?
This was a lecture?
Well, no. The talkers and the non-talkers. How did you feel about being a talker?
Depending on the topic, I have spoken in front of large groups, and it does not bother me. Mm-hmm. So I'm very used to it. And if I'm very knowledgeable on the topic, then I'm comfortable with it.
Uh-huh. Well, what about in a small group? How did you feel talking?
Well, it depended. I was trying to get a topic to talk on in the first place. And if I had one and had it kind of outlined, then I would have had a good idea on how to.
Okay, so for you, so talking off the cuff is uncomfortable.
That's the part that's uncomfortable, okay. But having a prepared speech and having it outlined, I don't have any problem with it.
I was uncomfortable because I didn't know his stance, so I was like really reluctant to say exactly what I thought of the lecture. I was just kind of like, you know, about it in a real general sort of roundabout way because I didn't want to say anything that would make me vulnerable.
Okay. All right. Was that similar to what maybe some other woman felt in those roles?
Because I wanted to find out what his opinion was first.
And you could kind of fit it in.
Right.
Uh-huh.
After I kind of felt him out.
Isn't that a typical female thing to do?
Very typical. Yes. I think very typical.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed is she was uncomfortable with one topic, and since it is an artificial situation, I was supposed to be the listener. I, you know, implored her and tried to figure out another topic for her to talk about. But in real life, I think that if